It's September 7th, and this is Rabbi Adler Shiur.
Sponsored by Ruth Miller and family, she's right here. Lilu Nishmat Shlomo Mordechai Ben Aryeh Leib Zetibadelor Chayim Tovim Ruth Shlomo Mordechai Hashem Yikom Damo was fell in a pigua many years ago in Tovshin Samach Dalet, that's 2004. The end of the month of Av. Near the Yeshuva Itamar, I remember that pigua well. And I also would like to dedicate the shir. It's in honor of, sponsored by Miriam Esris. Where are we? Are you? She'll be here. It's a very interesting sponsorship. For the bracha of learning Torah, living in Israel, and today's her blank birthday. So, you know, right, so if she... okay, Boker Tov. We just made the dedication. Very good. Okay? But it didn't say what birthday, so we just... We'll leave that out and say Adnei Besrim Shana. Keep coming to the shir.
I actually left earlier today, so they figured
out time. Okay, so. That's also a bracha. That's also a bracha. I think I once mentioned that on occasion many, many, many years ago in Ramot, when there was a lot of Malka honoring one of our members of the community, Shmuel Shkedi, who had been elected as deputy mayor, and one of his portfolios was transportation. The then mayor of Yerushalayim, you may have heard the name, Ehud Olmert. You may have heard the name. So he came to the Vlav Malka. I sat next to him, and I told him that those days I would go from Ramot down to Baka to Mechlelet Emunah, the Emunah College. You know, it was 8 o'clock in the morning, traffic jams, Pekakim by the old city. He says, don't worry, there's going to be a Begin highway, and it's going to be a thoroughfare. In a few minutes, you'll be in Baka. So I told him, I said, you know, the Ramban who came to Yerushalayim in 1267 couldn't find a minyan. What would the Ramban have given to be stuck in a traffic jam at 8 in the morning outside the old city of Yerushalayim? So he tells me, he says, you datiyim, even a pkak, even a traffic jam, you're optimistic. I said, you're darn right. You're absolutely right. Sure. Imagine thousands of people stuck at 8 in the morning in a pkak in Yerushalayim. It's a bracha. Think about it. It's a bracha. It's a bracha. Yeah.
I will tell my husband that he was stuck in traffic for an hour yesterday.
So you tell him that. Tell him it's a bracha. It's a bracha. I'll give you a similar bracha, not identical, but similar. And I really meant it. Many years ago, one of my daughters lived in Mizrach Taviot. And, you know, as a Saba patrol, sometimes you go, you pick up the kids from the gun, whatever. I used to think when the kids grow up, that's it, I'm through with God. But then I discovered it's called Saba Patrol. And the Seder. So I took her to a pizza shop in the neighborhood. And that day, it happened to have been that day was Yom HaShoah. That's Kasim, and I was listening to my granddaughter, you know, about what they did in the Gan. The observe Yom Shoah. Fine, we're sitting there, and all of a sudden some local school was got out of school, and hundreds of kids just pounced on this pizza shop, you know, with a making noise, yelling, my kids are, you know. So the owner of the store goes, check it, Jiladim, check it, check it. I went over to the store guy and I said, listen, you know, today's Yom HaShoah, 1.5 million Yiddish Kindlech perished in the Shoah. Look at this, we have Yiddish Kindlech Yerushalayim. Says Adonai, that's what they call it. Yiladim, Hayom, Efshar Litzkol. Today, it's Kindlech Yerushalayim. Hayom, just today, you know, just today. Today, a lot of people. But at least he internalized the message. Think about it. Yiddish Kindlech. I mean, the Navi Zechariah spoke about this. And then the Yiladim with the Adot, Yisachku, Chobot Yerushalayim. Here we are. We're here. That's it. This is not just a nevuah, you know. It was a nevuah. Now it's reality. Like many other psukim in Yeshayahu and Yechezkel. Last week, we touched on the introduction to the Sefer Mitzvot, which I mentioned I'll try to use examples from the Chagim of the month of Tishrei to illustrate certain things about the Sefer, but we just skimmed the surface with the source number one. I want to talk about a few more items about Sefer HaMitzvot from the source page that we have. And again, I will illustrate from Moadei or Chagei Chodesh Tishrei. In source number two, the Rambam, signing off his Mishnah commentary, says, Ani Moshe ben Maimon Hadayan, Ben Rabbi Yosef HaChacham, Ben Rabbi Yitzchak HaDayan, Ben Rabbi Yosef HaDayan, Ben Rabbi Avadya HaDayan, Ben Rabbi Shlomo HaRav Ben Rabbi Avadya HaDayan, Zecher Kedoshim Livracha. That's pretty good. I think in the Shidduch world, this is going to add up to a good Shidduch for his, you know, son Avraham. I don't have a clue who Rabbi Abraham ben Aramba married into, but this is what's called Yichus. Now, the Rambam is not flaunting this because, you know, he's like a, you know, Belzer Chosid, you know, just to tell everybody who he is. It was important for the Rambam to sign off in terms of placing himself in history, and it's not to be interpreted at all as a ga'ava, as being a show off of that. He just wants to show that he's coming from a place of authority. He's coming from a place where Torah and mother's milk were intertwined. He was nurtured from day zero in the words of Torah. And that's very important to know, that we're not talking about somebody who jumped on the bandwagon late in life or midlife. He had a midlife crisis, so he left work and went to a koilo. Then he wrote a sefer. That's not what we're talking about. Talking about somebody who from day one was nurtured in the world of Torah for generations. We already had traditions for generations. And he says, "V'hitchalti lechaber pirush zeh," I began to author this composition, or the parish of the commentary of the Mishnah. Vani ben shalosh ve'esrim shana, 23 years old. Now we know that the Rambam at age 23 has not yet arrived in Egypt. So where does he write the book? He writes it, as they say, baderech. He already left Spain at age 13. And now he's 10 years later, and he has not yet arrived at his final destination, which is Egypt. But he's going to be there by the time he finishes this book, and he's age 30. The meaning that the book, the Mishnah commentary, part of it at least, was written, as they say, baderech, and the Rambam tells us this in one of his writings, even on the boat. And one thing I know the Rambam did not have, I'm absolutely sure he did not have, he didn't have a laptop with a Project Ashut of Bar Ilan University and a disk on key to save all his material. The Rambam wrote his Mishnah commentary largely by memory of the sources, which is with no secretarial assistance. When you think about it, I mean, it's a superhuman effort. And having said that, when the Rambam finally arrives at safe in Egypt, and he has a relatively speaking comfortable life there, and he writes his Mishnah Torah, which is the main halachic work of the Rambam, and that takes him 10 years, from age 35 to 45.
When did he go to medical school?
There was no medical school. Let me tell you something, Mrs. Tech, medical school didn't exist then. You studied medicine by studying by somebody who was a physician. It was one-on-one, tutorial. So the question is, when did the Rambam study medicine? He studied medicine in North Africa, between Spain and Eretz Yisrael for a half a year, back to Egypt. When he gets to Egypt, he's already knowledgeable in medical science. And I can prove this, because in the Mishnah commentary, between age 23 and 30, there are over 60 direct references to the world of medicine, or to the world of science in general, where the world of medicine features highly. It's not the only thing that he talks about. He talks about geometry and he talks about engineering. He talks about astronomy. And he talks about physics and optics and so every field under the sun. But you have to realize, the 12th century, if you were a scientist, you were what we call in Hebrew kol boynik. You were everybody, jack of all trades. So it's not like today. You know, you specialize on X-ray of your pinky, but you can't look at an X-ray of a thumb. But that's the way it is. Things are specialists today for everything. In those days, you didn't have the concept of specialist. Just the opposite. It was holistic. And believe me, there's some doctors today who are going back to holistic medicine. Because you really have to see the full picture, and I'll just digress for a second. Yesterday I attended a conference in Bar-Ilan University on Psak Halakha, and it was a wonderful Dayan, who's retired already, Rav Duchovsky, you should be well. He said that a Pesach also has to have a holistic approach to Halakha, and that's something we nurtured from the Rav Zichron of the Bracha, who wasn't just concerned about the particular Shaila at hand, but he wanted to know something about the person who's asking the Shaila, and where the person's coming from, and what the person is willing to absorb as a response. And it was really a holistic picture. You have to know the economic situation of the home, the social, the shalom bayit issue. There's so much you have to know that it's almost impossible to really hit home at an appropriate psak. Because I once asked the Rav a question in conversation. Said the Mishnah talks about that there's a tefillah hanichnas lebet hamidrash. You come to Beit Midrash, there's a tefillah you say, and it's called tefillah Rabbi Nechunya ben Akane. It says shelo ekashel bedvar halacha v'yislachu bi chaverai, that I won't stumble in any halacha. Which I should be on track in my understanding of Torah. So I asked the Rav. I said, do we as talmidim have to say this every day we come to the yeshiva? So he says, no. Chazal didn't make this for talmidim. He says, what do you want from the Rabban Shalom? If you have a head, you'll understand the Tosfot and the Rambam. If you don't have a head, you can say the tefillah 100 times, it's not going to work. That's what he said. So who's it for? He says it's for poskim, for people who have to render halachic decisions. Why? Because they may know the material, but they may not know the entire background of where that child is coming from. And a person needs a special guiding light from above, a special hashgachah, to get that poisek to focus on the right line and the right word in the right sefer that's going to allow him to come up with an appropriate psak. Shelo ekashel b'dvar halacha v'yisimchu b'chaverai, that the person who asked the question will ultimately be satisfied and happy that this is right, this sounds right, and that's true in so many different areas as well, in Psak Halakha, and so on. So just getting back, the Rambam was a holistic person, and being a holistic person, both in sciences and so on, so he was aware of medicine already, so he didn't have to go to medical school. In those days, if you're a proven person in medical areas, you're in business. So, and the Rambam didn't serve professionally as a physician until he was in Egypt already, and he had an older brother who was supporting him, giving him a stipend. But the brother was an international merchant. The boat sunk in the Indian Ocean with all the merchandise, and the Rambam was left penniless, without any source of income. The Jewish community in Cairo wanted to support him, and he refused to accept it. You don't want to take stock from anybody. But the Rambam does write, in a very, very interesting autobiographical comment, that he was basically depressed for a year. It says he couldn't get off his bed. I mean, classic signs of clinical depression. until he was able to get out of it. And then apparently saw an ad in the paper that the Sultan was looking for a position, you know, no small job, and the Rambam got the job. And from then on, he was, you know, his parnasa was guaranteed. Except that he had a very long work day, because it took him time to get there, and he had to serve them, and he'd get back home, and he ran a clinic for Jews and non-Jews alike in the town. And it's the only time he had a chance to teach Torah was on Shabbat in the afternoon, and in the evening hours, night hours, he would write Torah. And all this is going on. The man is working a day and a half and within 24 hours. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Right? He was a really above human. And people recognize that as well. So he writes, he's 23 years old when he starts writing this. Vishlamti oto b'mitzrayim. When I got to Egypt, I was able to polish off this book. And I'm 30 years old. Shehi shnat elef v'abamayot v'teisha v'shivim lishtarot. It equals 1168. Shtarot is not a dating from Briyat Olam from creation. The Rambam uses an interesting dating calendar that began when Alexander the Great comes to Yerushalayim in the year 333 BCE. There's several reasons why the Jewish community started counting year one from the day that Alexander arrives. And it's the entire letter of Rav Shrira Gaon, who's the father of Rav Hai Gaon, 9th century, that gives us all the dates and places of the period of the Gaonim, from the 6th to the 9th century. All the dates are in reference to this Minyan Shtarot. The Rambam uses it in the Mishneh Torah as well, but there he does us a favor. He says, and it's also such and such from creation, and it's also such and such from the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, and it's also Minyan Shtarot. So you can synchronize it. Here he just gives us the Minyan Shtarot. I went home and figured it out. That's 1168, which means the Rambam started writing the book in 1161. Now it's 1168, and he's completed the Mishnah, the Perish HaMishnah. 5 years later, in 1173, starts writing the Mishnah Torah and completes it 1183, and he's 45 years old. Rambam goes on to live till the year 1204. So we have a fairly good idea of the Rambam's biography. Now, if he's 30 years old in 1168, what year was he born?
30.
Good. Einsteins we have here. 1138. So how come in every history book it says 1135?
Wasn't it a sunset?
You heard something from me once. It wasn't the sun, but... the grandson.
Okay.
You're good. The grandson. There's a letter from the Rambam's grandson, Rabbi David ben Abraham ben Arambam, who gives dates of his grandfather's birth and death. From there we learn that he was born on Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, and the date, equivalent date, is 1135. And that letter, and from there also we learn that he dies on the 20th of Tevet in the year equivalent to 1204. So that was always used as the basis of the dating of the Rambam. But that was challenged in the middle of the 20th century because of this line. Somebody woke up and noticed that at the end of Perish HaMishnah, the Rambam gives a date, it's equivalent to 1168, and now I'm 30 years old. So Rav Professor Shol Lieberman, Zichron LeBracha, who I have the highest regard. So what does he do with this? He says, obviously, there was a mistake in this end of Perish HaMishnah, and it should read, Vani ben shloshim v'shalosh shana, and I'm 33 years old. Because he's so convinced that the Rambam was born in 1135, so if the dating of the end of the Perish HaMishnah is 1168, and I'm 30 years old, that doesn't make sense. So obviously, some cipher, some scribe, made a mistake. And it's not Vani ben Shloshim, but Ani ben Shloshim v'shaloshanim. And then everything works out beautifully because you take 33 from 1168, you get 1135. There's only one catch. We happen to have many sources of this in manuscript form of the Rambam's writings. And now one of them says Vani ben Shloshim v'shaloshana. It's Vani ben Shloshim. So now you have to pick and choose. You have the Rambam against his grandson. Who's a better source? Obviously the Rambam. So the following have really turned it around. One is Rav Kapach Zatzal, and my mentor from Bar Ilan, Rav Professor Shlomo Zalman Havlin, and the great Rambamist from Ma'ale Adumim, or Rav Yitzhak Shilat. Some great people today have really just turned it around and said, we have to rewrite the date, it's 1138. And this became not just an academic issue, but you remember back in 1981, So, you know, we used to have a lira. Remember the matbea? Remember lirot, right? Remember those days? And then we went over to the shkalim, right? And then after a few years, we went to the shekel chadash. When first we moved the decimal over one, then we moved it over three places. So we have now the shekel chadash. But the old shekel, there was a 1,000 shekel bill, and it had the Rambam's picture. It was green print, and in very, very light print, it had actually a responsum of the Rambam. It was in Judeo-Arabic, but it began in Hebrew, Kigon Shtarei Yisrael. It had to do with shtarot, with documents, and a bill of monetary value is called a shtar also. So they thought it was great. They dug up, you know, a shtuva from the Rambam that deals with shtarot. So it's Kigon Shtarei Yisrael, and it gives you all the whatever the Rambam wrote there. But it's in fine print in the background. But it gives some biographical information, just like if you have a bill that has Agnon or Bensvi or Golda Meir, whatever it is, you know, that's what they do in the bank. So they didn't know when the birthday was, because there was a machloket between the others at 1135, 1138. And they turned to various scholars, and Bank Yisrael decided that Rav Kapach was right, and they wrote 1138. So but now we don't have it anymore. We don't use the Rambam's already out. You know, the others have moved in.
When did he get married?
I don't remember when he
did that. He told about his grandson.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know that he had a daughter who died as a child from some child's disease. She never made it to adulthood. And a son who became his successor. And a great person in his own right. But if you had a mazel of having a father like the Rambam, you know, that's a tough act to follow. And it really was for Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam. But nevertheless, he was the Rambam's successor in Mitzrayim. So here you have the Rambam and his Mishnah commentary. So you have this five-year gap between 1168 and 1173, between the end of the Perashat Mishnah and the beginning of the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam's not sitting twiddling his thumbs in those 5 years. He writes two very important books. The first one is the Sefer HaMitzvot. And he writes it, the Book of Commandments, is actually a promo. It's a prologue to the Mishnah Torah. He says, before I write this great book that I'm planning to write, I have to make seder. I have to make order in the idea of 613 mitzvot, because I've seen some books on the subject, and it's a balaga. They're incorporating the rabbinic mitzvahs. I mentioned last week, Rabbi Sadugon and the Halachot Gedolot. They're counting Hanukkah candles and reading the Megillah on Purim. This can't be. And the Rambam understands that he's got to make some order to the mitzvot of the Torah. So he authors this book primarily to give us the listing, to give us the sources in the Chumash where we know that this pasuk is a mitzvah, to define the mitzvah on some level, exactly what the definition is. He's not going to teach us the nitty-gritty halachot. That's, you know, stay tuned, that's the Mishnah Torah. But at least a one-liner, a type of headliner of sorts. This is a promotion of what's to come. And this is really essentially what the Sefer HaMitzvot really is all about. He's rarely expansive. Occasionally he'll branch out and say a few extra things. But usually it's very concise. And he writes it in Judeo-Arabic yet. He does not yet write it in Hebrew, just like he wrote the whole Mishnah commentary in Judeo-Arabic, and later in life allowed a family, Ibn Tibbon, to translate it into Hebrew. Rav Kapach, in our generation, translated everything again from the original Arabic to Hebrew. But the Mishnah Torah he chooses to write in the language of the Mishnah, so it's in Hebrew, and he regrets later in life, I think I said this last week, that he wrote the Book of Mitzvot in Arabic, because this book's got to make it in Europe, in southern France, in Provence. It doesn't make it there, it has no chance. So he does commission the Sefer to be translated into Hebrew. The other thing is, it's too late. Too late meaning, when a Sefer comes out, and it's not accessible, because it's a language that people don't know, so even if it's later translated, it takes time for the world to even know that there is a translation, and people don't really buy the book. You have to realize, in the 12th century, people didn't go in Book of Shavuot Sefer to buy books. It was a fortune of money to buy Sefer. And yet you thought 10 times over before you spent money on having a Sefer copied. That's really what it meant. You had to get a cipher, just like today. If you want a Sefer Torah, you have to hire a cipher to copy a Sefer Torah or write a Sefer Torah. So then, you wanted a Rambam? Okay, let's call the cipher. Doesn't have to be perfect letters like Sefer Torah. You need somebody, a scribe, who can write and do it, you know, effectively without mistakes. And many of them did make mistakes. They were human. They were human. So in source number two, which is the introduction to the Sefer Mitzvot, he tells us, Amar Harav Hagadol Marana Varavana Moshe Eved Elokim. 1 second. A person doesn't write like that. A person doesn't write. If I'm going to write a book, I'm not going to start by saying, I am the greatest genius and Talmud Chacham that ever walked the face of this world. I have to know some people who actually would start their book like that. But I wouldn't. And for sure the Rambam wouldn't. But the translator wrote that. Amar Harav Hagadol Marana Varabana Moshe Eved Elokim Ben Kvod Marana Varabana Harav Maimon Zatzal. As a matter of fact, I have opened Rav Kapach's edition, who has the Arabic next to the Hebrew. I'm just going to look. Right. The Rambam begins his book by saying, and now that I have completed the widespread, the accepted book that I wrote the commentary on all the Mishnah, that's how it begins. Which in the Bar Ilan, they took it from the Hebrew translations, not Rav Kapach, but the Ibn Tibbon family that began. And the great Rav Maranan v'Rabanan, Marenu v'Rabenu, Moshe, servant of God, the son of honorable Marenu v'Rabenu, Rav Maimon Zatzal, that was the translator's add-on. Rambam never wrote that. The Rambam began, "Ibnei shekadam lanu achibur hamafursam asher klalanu bo pirush ha-mishnah, kol ha-mishnah." Now that I have completed the now that I've completed the famous book that explained all the Mishnah, and he says, and my intentions, my intentions was to summarize every aspect of the Mishnah. I never intended that it should be complete and all-encompassing. And the reason is because the Mishnah is not complete and all-encompassing. So therefore, the Rambam's writing a commentary to the Mishnah, he, by definition, has latched onto the subject matter of the Mishnah. And he's not going to start writing about things that are not in the Mishnah. So now I'm telling you, I want to go beyond the Mishnah and write a book that will incorporate everything, literally everything, everything, everything. And that's what he says in the next line. Ve'iti gam ken shachaber chibur yichlol kol dinei haTorah mishpateha ad shelo yei davar chasar mimenu. There's going to be nothing left out. I'm going to write about everything. And that's a bold, bold, bold project. And if you'll jump down to the next on the line, he actually explains his deliberations. What language should I write it in? Well, I think I'm going to write it in Hebrew. I'm writing in Hebrew, but I'm not going to write it in the language of Tanakh. Why? Because Tanakh is not expressive enough. I don't have enough vocabulary there. So I'm going to write it in the language of the Mishnah. Rambam figured, maybe not everybody studies Gemara, but every Jew is a Shema Torah Mitzvah has dabbled in Mishnah, is familiar with the language. He also says, I'm not going to write it in Arabic, because it's not going to make it to those countries that don't speak Arabic. So in other words, the Rambam already knew that his projection for the Sefer Mishneh Torah is to go worldwide. So he cannot limit it to a particular locale that spoke a particular language. He prefers Hebrew, which in the language of the Mishnah, where he feels he's got a best shot that Jews throughout the world will be familiar with the Hebrew of the Mishnah. Yeah.
Rabbi, who was his ultimate audience? The contemporary Jews,
right.
Were they educated enough or had access to fully understand what he was writing? You just listed half a dozen major scholars who live here in Israel who deal with it every day.
Right.
And there are hundreds of others.
Right.
But they have the background that did the yeshiva. The schlepper who was hauling milk or, you know, camels.
So the schlepper who hauled milk and camels most probably knew some Mishnah. The Rambam actually authors the Mishnah Torah not for the Rav or his grandfather, Rav Chaim and Brisk, to come up with all these phenomenal, sizzling novelet. He writes it for the average guy on the street as a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. That's what he writes it, as a digest to get everybody through the day halachically. That's really what he writes it for. That's one of his principal declared objectives. There are objectives that go beyond that. His whole idea that he's writing about everything, why in the world should 12th century Egypt or anywhere else in the world have to know the details about leprosy, Neged Zarat, or for that matter, two fat books about Beit HaMikdash activities. Because the Rambam believes that in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and that's obligatory to every Jew, there's no such thing as some subject matter is in and some subject matter is out. The Rambam believes that the idea that there is an objective of Torah study so that I can perform the mitzvah properly is not the ideal Torah study. The ideal Torah study is to get the full picture of the revelation of God's will in this world. And that revealed will of God comes through every single mitzvah in the Torah, whether it's practical or not practical today. And that's what he writes it on the level that everyone can understand it. You know, we have many times in literature certain books that everyone can read it and everybody can get some basic understanding out of it. And if you're really sharp, you'll have a different level of understanding of it. And the Rambam believed that to be true with his Sefer as well. Indeed, that's what it turned out to be. The only place in the world that the book Mishneh Torah met its original objective to be popular for everybody was half of Yemen. Half of Yemen, not even all of Yemen. Where Rav Kapach came from, that was what Rambam is. Those were those who lived and breathed Rambam. So much so that if there was conflict between Rabbi Yosef Karo, who lives 400 years later, in the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam is the only name to be discussed. They lived by the Rambam. But even the other half of Yemen, let alone everybody else in the world, so they went with Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Sfaradi and Shulchan Aruch, and in Europe they went with Rabbi Moshe Isserles, the Ramo. So where did the Rambam factor? He should have, just retreated to oblivion. That's what should have happened. But that didn't happen. What didn't happen? The Rav's son-in-law, Professor Isidor Twersky, Zichron Lebracha, from Harvard, in his master piece book, the introduction to the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam, he says, what happened was that the Rambam, the Mishnah Torah, became, and I'm quoting, the prism by which all subsequent halachic discussion would have to go through. Which means while we're not going to open up the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam to figure out what do I do on every Shabbos or Yom Tov, but if I'm going to give a shiur about Shabbat and Yom Tov, I'm interested to know what the Rambam's opinion is on every detail of halacha. And I will dissect the Rambam and his language and contrast it with other things he's written. The Mishnah Torah became the launching pad for a subsequent halakhic discussion. And the irony was that the Rambam in his introduction to Mishnah Torah says, and after this book, there'll be no longer a need to author any other books in the world of Torah Sheba'al Peh. What ultimately happened was around this book, Mishnah Torah, more books were written than any other Sefer collectively. More Sfarim. There was a great professor at YU, Professor Yaakov Dienstag, Zichron Lebracha. His job at YU, he was called the Maimonides Bibliographer. Bibliography. Figure out bibliography. You know, somebody wrote a bunch of books. Fine, you put out a page of bibliography. 2 pages. 5 pages, 10 pages. I mean, how much can a person write a bibliography of the Rambam? The Rambam himself, if you want to know how much was written on the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam, Professor Dienstag published books, that you should know what type of books are written. These were Pirushim, these were analysis, this was linguistic, whatever. The Rambam has been subjected from every single scholarly angle to investigation, that it created a scenario of 800 years of literary works. The exact opposite of what the Rambam had in mind. Exact opposite. Yeah?
When did Rav Kappa and Ibn Tibbon lived.
Well, Ibn Tibbon lived in the days of the Rambam. This is later.
Kappa is current.
Tabach died just a few years ago.
Okay. So, did the Rambam see Ibn Tibbon's translation?
He knew of it. He gave them directions.
No, as a good Kappa and Siegel on it.
No. You want to know if there was a rubber stamp of it on the Rambam?
Yeah.
The answer is no.
Okay.
It was in Europe, and he sent letters to give them direction how to translate. He says, don't translate words. Read the whole paragraph. Absorb what I was saying. And then give it over in the idiom of the local place. Because sometimes if you translate literally, you're going to miss the whole point. It then won't even make sense. So he says, forgo the word here and there. But when you do that, you're opening yourself up for is different opinions of how to translate. Because that's why Rav Kappa's translation and the Ibn Tibbon translation don't always read identically. Because different translators had different things in mind. And Rav Kappa, living in Medinat Yisrael,
they can't be that different.
They're very different. Because Rav Kappa's Hebrew is our Hebrew here in Medinat Yisrael. He wants to make it user-friendly for an Israeli to read. So sometimes he'll even apologize by translating using a very modern word that, the Rambam never entertained using such a word. But he just figures that we will understand it better if he uses such a word. And he'll comment in his footnote why he uses such a word. So it was an awesome project. Rav Kappach received Pras Yisrael on Yom HaTzmaut for all his translations. He retranslated from Judeo-Arabic, Rav Sadia Gaon to Menot B'Deyot, and the Mishnah commentary, and the Sefer HaMitzvot, and the Mor Nevuchim. I mean, he just did so much. And his wife, Bracha Kappa Chadash Shalom, won Pras Yisrael for her work in Staka and Chesed and so on. They're the only couple to win, the husband and wife win Pras Yisrael for two different categories. Both were called Mif'al HaChayim. She was Mif'al HaChayim, which means her wildlife project, and he won it for rabbinic literature, in the category of rabbinic literature. Yeah.
Apropos to the general question about the common people, many, many years ago, I was hitchhiking between Beit Galilion and Hoboken. I got picked up by a garbage truck.
Yeah.
And the driver was a Yemenite. He started asking questions in Tanakh, and I couldn't answer. I'm still in the back.
I just want to know if he put you then in the back of the truck.
Luckily.
The Yemenites could read Hebrew from every angle because there was one chumash on the table in their young schooling. So if you sat opposite the teacher, you had to read the Hebrew upside down. They had this unbelievable ability. I actually saw this once in Marvada Ksamim when we did a simcha once, and we have the menu in front of us. I'm sitting with my wife, and Chaim sitting opposite us. And he's reading. Now, the guy knows the menu by heart, but look at it. So he looks, he says, we've been doing this for generations. It was really terrific. Not much terrific. So the Rambam is going to write this. He writes why he's going to write the Mishnah Torah. Then, in the next paragraph, in paragraph 4, he goes on to say, I have to introduce it with this book called Sefer HaMitzvot. I'm not going to read the whole paragraph now. V'hu HaSefer HaZeh She'ava'er Bo Minyan HaMitzvot. Turn the page to source number 5. In source 5, he says, and before I start writing the book, the Rav who gets up on Shabbos and says, Eide Gech Reden Gech Zogen Apoverta. Before I start speaking, I'm going to say a few words. Then you are in big trouble. Big trouble. So that's what the Rambam says. Before I get started, I have to say a few words. And the few words are 14 paragraphs, almost chapters, of ground rules. Ground rules. But why is a particular pasuk a mitzvah? And why is it not a mitzvah? And this really is the hallmark of the Sefer. Because once you understand the ground rules, then everything else just fits into place. You understand why he takes this pasuk as a mitzvah and that pasuk is left out. It's not a mitzvah because it has to conform to the ground rules. Usually it's very smooth. It's obvious. As you go through the Sefer Mitzvot, you figure out why he's doing this. Occasionally, it's a little bit tension. And the Rambam was even asked in some of his letters, in his response, why does that fit? It seems to negate one of these 14 introductory comments, and the Rambam has to respond to it. He says, yeah, because I figured this, I figured that. Here and there, there was some tension. But by and large, it functions. But he writes, I'm going to say, look in source number 5, V'ani ata matchil b'zichron ha-sharashim. He calls them roots. Rav Kappa calls them klalim. Interesting, they translate the word differently for whatever it was in Arabic. But the common, we call it the 14 sharashim, which is like roots. Rambam calls it Rav Kappa translated as principles. Shavu'i l'smoch alehem b'sefer mitzvot v'heim arba'asar sharashim. I'm just going to read a comment of Rav Kappa on this one line where Rambam says, and there are 14. Rambam doesn't call it anything. He calls it in Arabic. The translator Ibn Tibbon called it Sharashim. That's what the print of the Bar Ilan computer gave me, the Ibn Tibbon translation. Rav Kappa calls it Klalim, principles. And Rav Kappa writes, Hamispar Arba'asar Chaviv Al Rabbeinu Mishuma. Some reason, the number 14 was very, very beloved by the Rambam. Kan, here, Kava Arba'asar Klalim. He establishes 14 principles. Et Sifro Mishneh Torah Chilek La'Arba'asar Sfarim. The Mishneh Torah was given a nickname later on in history. Yad Chazakah. Yud Dalet is 14, the 14 books. V'Sifro Moreh Nebuchim Chelek Gimel, Perek Lamed Hei, Siveg Et Kol Mitzvot HaTorah La'Arba'asar Arba'asar Kvutzot. That when the Rambam in the third section of Moreh Nebuchim deals with mitzvah rationale, he divides all the Torah into exactly 14 groupings. And they don't necessarily match the 14 books of the Mishneh Torah. They're closely related, but there are some notable exceptions. But nevertheless, he talks about ta'ameh mitzvot in terms of 14 categories. Ve'ein laniach, and Rav Kappa continues, you cannot assume shekol eila itramuye itramu mebli meisim. An interesting Talmudic expression in Aramaic. He says, I can't believe that this was all coincidental. I can't believe it. Now, Rav Kappa has nothing to add to his amazement. He says, get a look. Take a look at that. 14 here, 14 there, 14 there. He must have liked that number a lot. So first of all, I want to add to Rav Kappa's knowledge. It's not his fault. It's not something that he forgot. But somebody actually made a startling discovery in the Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam. Shortly, either Rav Kappa was very old already, or never saw this particular article or Sefer, or it was after Rav Kappa passed away. I have an acquaintance in the Beersheba, Professor Avi Avraham Feintuch. He's a professor of mathematics. He's a musmuch from YU. And he hails from Toronto, actually. His daughter-in-law's name just made headlines as being the woman rabbi appointed by Rabbeni Lau in the Ramban Shul in our neighborhood. Okay. Karmit Feintuch. But Avi Feintuch is a seasoned Talmid Chacham. And in Be'er Sheva, we got to know him when we lived in Be'er Sheva in the 80s, in the shul in what's called Shchunah Hay, he would give a shiur every Shabbos on this book, Sefer Mitzvot. Why did he do one of this book, Sefer Mitzvot? First of all, as a mathematician, I guess he liked numbers, so whatever. But year after year, he's giving shiurim, and when you do that, you get connected to a Sefer, you start feeling the pulse of the author, and you start seeing things in the book that no one else ever saw. And what he's concerned about is the order, the sequential order. The Rambam is not looking at Parshat HaShavua at all. He begins Sefer Mitzvot with Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, the belief that God exists. Now that's in Parshat Yitro, it's the first of the Aseret HaDibrot. We know that. What exactly is the order? We know Rambam splits the Mitzvot into the do's and the don'ts. Mitzvot Taseh, Mitzvot Lo Taseh. So it goes from number 1 to 248. And then again, from number 1 to 365. That everybody knows. That's not a Kiddush. Rambam even says why. He says, he brings a Gemara. He says, 248 is the limbs of the body. 365 is the days of the year. So every day and every limb, you're supposed to be involved in a mitzvah. The only problem is you don't know which day corresponds to any mitzvah. But all right, say, do them all. Fine. But that's a nice drash. It's a nice drash. So that the Rambam has. Everybody knows that. It's 365. It's 248 against 365, and it adds up to 613. Fine. someone asked the Rambam a question. I don't understand why Shemitah, which is the mitzvah of cessation of land work, Shemitat Karkaot, the seventh year, V'shaftar et Shabbat Hashem, is listed as mitzvah 134, and the mitzvah of Shemitat Ksafim, canceling the loans in the seventh year, Shemitat Ksafim, is 141. Why didn't you write the Shemitat Ksafim next to Shemitat Karkaot? Should have been 142. I mean, somebody asked the Rambam this question. So, you can almost expect the Rambam to say, forget about it, what's the difference, right? No! The Rambam says, I'll tell you why I did it. Because there was a connection to 142, 143, and there was something connected to Shemitah, and I wanted to get it all in together. And then when I finished that clump of mitzvahs, then I got back to Shemitah Tzafim, it was 141. Because he gives an answer. Whether you like the answer or not is irrelevant, but at least the author gives an answer. He was asked the question, but what do you see from that tshuva? That the Rambam gave thought to the sequential order of the mitzvot. It wasn't chop-plop. It wasn't, all right, there's another mitzvot. There was a design in the Sefer Mitzvot. The question is, what is the order? What is the order? What is the order? What's behind, what's governing the Rambam's thinking? Yeah?
Well, 248 is 14.
Interesting, okay.
Oh, that's
cool. And what about 365? Isn't that 14 also? Isn't that 14 also?
95 is 14.
That is phenomenal. 365 is also 14. That is phenomenal. Wow, we can add that. 248 is 14, 248. And 365 is also 14. That's very good. Very good. But let me tell you what Professor Feintuch says. That was very, very good. Yeah. You better run to the copyright because I'm going to use this. And they won't be able to sue me, you know.
So take her name.
There you go.
Shame.
Right. Shame Omro. Yeah. Shame Omro. For sure, absolutely. So, yeah, it works out. Very good. Professor Feintuch says, let's look at that Maor Nevuchim that's written late in life. We're going to contrast it with the Sefer Mitzvot that's written earlier in life, between age 30 and 35. And what does he do over there in Maor Nevuchim? He divides all the Mitzvot into 14 categories or packages of Ta'amei HaMitzvot, Mitzvah rationale. And you see what he does. He names them. Pashut, he names them. As a grouping, not in a particular order, but you can see it as a grouping. Group one is Avodat Hashem. Group two is Chagim. Group three is Kashrut. Group four is this. Group five is that. It goes on to group 14. 14 categories. And he says, take a look. All we have to do in the Sefer Mitzvot from 1 to 248, and then again from 1 to 365, is take a pencil and mark where you think is the border of group 1, group 2, group 3, group 4, group 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, bingo, 14. There are 14 groupings in the listing of the mitzvot asei, and 14 groupings in the mitzvah listing of the mitzvot lo tasei. They parallel perfectly, and they parallel the 14 groupings of the Maor Nevuchim that the Rambam's going to write about later, which means that when he wrote the Maor Nevuchim, what did he have in mind? What I wrote when I was 31 years old. So he's got 14 and 14, and the book begins with 14 principles, so it's triangular. On top it's 14 principles, which then split into the positive mitzvot, 14 categories, the negative mitzvot, 14 categories. So it's again, it's a triple use of 14. It's a triple use of 14. And the remez is 248 equals 14, and 365 equals 14. It's tremendous. And you take that with the three, with the 14 categories of Maor Nevuchim, the 14 books of Mishnah Torah. Where's it from? Rav Kapha says, one second, this is not an accident. Chaviv alav. What is chaviv alav? He loved it, you know. What do you mean, love it? What? Rambam is a little kid here. He loved it.
Yes.
So I gave the hint about 20 minutes ago. Rabbi David ben Abraham ben Rambam reminds us, or teaches us, that the Rambam was born on Erev Pesach. What's the calendar date of Erev Pesach? 14th of Nisan. I think the Rambam was attached to his birthday. I really think so. He was attached to his birthday, the 14th. The number 14, he was really, really attached to that number. And somebody asked me once, and I think we even talked about it here many years ago, in the Mishnah commentary, where the Rambam says that he's attached to the Mishnah, but once in a while, very apologetically, he becomes very expansive. There are several major expansions. One is the 8 chapters introducing Pirkei Avot, called It's a Book in Itself. It's like a book within a book, Shmona Prakim. But the other, no less popular and famous, is the 13 Animamins, the 13 principles, basic principles. It's in the introduction to the last parak of Masechet Sanhedrin, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek Le'olam Haba. And there, the Rambam gives us what he considers the 13 basic tenets of Yadut.
Yeah, why weren't they
14?
They hid something, and it's unofficial, and if you look, you will find 14.
Now you're going to have to tell me what it is, and then you're going to get credit.
But I think it's something you may have said that I just
That's
pulled
correct.
Out of my head.
You're correct.
Possible,
you're correct. Right? I did say
so
it.
What was it?
I did
what
say
was
it.
The mystery?
I did say it. I did say it. Rav Nachum Rabinowitz, the famous Rosh Hashiva from Ma'ale Adamim, who, by the way, was A.B. Feintop's Rebbe when Rav Nachum was a Rav in Toronto. Rav Nachum Rabinowitz, and this A.B. Feintop, by the way, published what I just said now in a book. It's called Pikudei Yesharim, and it's published by the Yeshiva Ma'ale Adamim. And what's great about it, he actually quotes me once, so that makes the book even better. The Rav Nachum Rabinowitz says that there is a 14th. Ikar. Ikar means principle. And what is that Ikar? It's free will. The doctrine of free will. The doctrine of free will is the 14th Ikar. And how do we know that the Rambam put it on the pedestal of an Ikar, even though it's not there in the source of the Masechet Sanhedrin? You only have 13 there. The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, in Hilchot Tshuva, Perek Hey and Vav, where he talks about Tshuva, he says, without the doctrine of free will, in Hebrew we would say today, if Shalas go at the Basta, you can close the shop. There's no Yahadut without free will. And the whole laws of Dinei Tshuva are predicated upon the doctrine of free will. And he calls it by name, Zeikar. This is an Ikar. So the only question is, why the Rambam doesn't have 14? He does have 14. What's the question? How come it's not there in the source of the Seventh Sanhedrin, only 13? There's no answer.
It's a foundation that...
It's no less a foundation than the 13 that are there. Without the doctrine of free will, you can close the Torah. It's not going to work. Just like anything else he wrote in the 13. All of those 13 principles are doctrines, and this is the 14th doctrine. So the question is now technical. How come the list only has 13 when we know now there are 14? So first of all, I'm thrilled. I always thought in my mind that it's got to be a 14th, and I was grappling in the air. When I saw this by Rav Nachum, I said hallel. I was really, really happy to have seen it, because I knew I was barking up the right tree. There had to be a 14th. Why it's not there in the Masechet Sanhedrin source, until this very day we don't have an answer. I dug up manuscripts to see, maybe it fell out somewhere, maybe it's whatever, it's not there. And not only is it not there, but the poets who wrote, and we have this in the Siddur, Ani Ma'amin Be'Emunah Shleima She. Like, we're familiar with the 12th, because that's, Fried made the niggin about it. She'biyat HaMashiach. Mashiach, Mashiach, Mashiach. But there are 13 Ani Ma'amins there. But more popular than the 13 Ani Ma'amins is Yigdal. Is Yigdal. So you have 13 sentences. And the last one is Tchiyat HaMeitim. Meitim Yichayei El Barov Chazdo Baruch HaDei HaShem Tilato. And you ever notice the kids who get up and sing Yigdal? They sing that line twice. Why? Because they'll tell you, because it doesn't fit in the niggin. You can't end the song. So you say it again. I say it's because there's a 14th line that was missing. And we don't have the 14th line. So repeat the 13th line. Yeah,
may I suggest that 14 is also not only in Pilgrim's birthday, but also because 14 is 7 times 7, and 7 is one of the basic numbers embedded in Tanakh.
There's no question that 7 is a number, is one of the typological numbers of Tanakh. Typological number means a number that repeats itself, no different than 40 and 10 and 3. and seven, and in Kabbalistic literature, I mean, it shows up in the scheme of Sfirat HaOmer of 7 times 7, and Shemitah and Yovel 7 times 7. That's no doubt. So 14 is a multiple of 7. We're not going to accuse the Rambam of being in the Kabbalistic realm, because he was not. This I heard from Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal, who said that it's pure, Mishnah Torah is pure halacha. There is no element of Kabbalah at all. So if somebody's looking for a Sefer Hilchati that has not been affected at all by the world of Kabbalah, it's the Rambam. So you're right, in the sense that it is a multiple of 7. My suggestion that it's an affinity to his birthday is also problematic, because that smacks of astrology. And the Rambam was so against astrology. I mean, it's like unbelievable. But that doesn't mean he didn't have a particular affection to the birthday, because Chazal had affection to certain birthdays, by the way, like Moshe Rabbeinu's birthday of Zayin Adar, and the Chazal talk about the Avot, and when were they born, whether it was Nisan or Tishrei. It was important for us to know when they were born. Right, Moshe was 7 both in and out, 7th of Adar and 7th of Adar, right. Yeah, so birthdays are significant in a person's lifetime, on some level. So it's possible that he saw himself, and you have to realize, being born on Erev Pesach and being called Moshe, you know, you see yourself on some role. I think once I gave out a page here from the Sfunot HaMikra, which are called the Torah Codes. So that's a subject in itself, whether there's anything to it or it's just Narishkeit. But I've never said that anything is Narishkeit, but perhaps some people invest a little bit too much authority in the Tzvunot, in the codes, but really it's subjecting the Torah, the whole Tanakh, to computer review by lifting out every 7th letter, every 49th letter. These are multiples of 7, right? And all of a sudden, right, now there happens to be something to this. And great Gedolei Yisrael in the Middle Ages has said something about Roshei Tevot, about acronyms and gematrias. This is called the world of remez, right? There's pshat, there's drash, there's remez and sod. So this is remez. These are allusions, right? If I'm not mistaken, I think if you take every 7th letter of the Torah from the beginning of the word of the Torah, either the 7th or every 49th letter, it spells out yud shin, which is sin, resh aleph lamed, Israel. And then Chazal say, Vishul Yisrael, Shinikra Reshit. These things are there. That the Ramban, now he's a Kabbalist, okay, he said that the Rambam, irrespective of the fact that the Ramban argues with the Rambam on so many different issues, but the awe and respect that the Ramban had for the Rambam is beyond dispute. So the Ramban says about the Rambam, who dies earlier, there's a remez to the Rambam in Parshat Bo. Moshe Rabbeinu's parsha, when it comes, he's the deliverer, he's the Goel and Moshiach on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it says in Shmot Yud Bet, Revolt Moftai Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Will be many wonders in the land of Egypt. The Roshei Tevot, Revolt Moftai Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Spells out Rambam. And the Ramban says, you see, the Torah foretold the arrival of the Rambam on this parsha, which is the parsha of Erev Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is precisely when the Rambam was born. So that's what the Ramban said. So the Balat, the Tzvunot, the codes, you know, these people who put out the codes. So one of the most amazing, I mean really, really amazing, is they took this perek, which is the end of Yud Aleph and all of Yud Bet, the Shmot, Parashat Bo, and they saw a letter Mem. They subjected it to the 49 letter spread, and at one point Mem lights up, and then 49 letters are Shin, and 49 letters are Nun, and 49 letters are Hey. That spells out the word Mishnah. And then later on in the text, a Taf, and 49 letters a Vav, and 49 letters a Resh, and 49 letters later a Hey, Mishnah Torah. So there's the word Mishnah Torah embedded encryptically in this parsha. But one second, it wasn't right after each other. It was later on in the parsha. And the computer took the mem of Mishnah in this remez and the taf of Torah in this remez and counted the letters. It was 613 letters. Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah on Kol HaTorah Kula. On everything. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing, I must say. Yeah, Parshat Rivka.
Since you're adding up numbers, 14, 4
minus 5. Okay, here we go. I think I'm going to tell Phil to rename this class. This is going to be a math class. 14, give it again, Rivka.
5. Yeah.
That 14 is 1 and 4, adds up to Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Yafeh, and he's writing the Mishnah Torah. Now he gets the name Mishnah Torah from the Chumash itself, because Sefer Devarim calls itself Mishnah Torah, which is a Torah review. And guess what I'm doing here? It's a Torah review of everything. It's the Torah Shebaal Peh. It's all the oral law. Use the same name. And he does see himself as the next Moshe. You know, Rav Tversky, Zechariah Lebracha, pointed out, what I think it was his last article he wrote in his lifetime, about the appreciation of the Rambam. How long did it take for the world to appreciate the greatness of the Rambam? So first of all, he was already appreciated while he was still alive. But really, he like takes off, as they say in this country, they say that it goes viral. I mean, it just takes off completely. Shortly after he dies, they're already saying, Mi Moshe ad Moshe, lo kam ke Moshe. Means from Moshe Rabbeinu until Moshe ben Maimon, there's been nobody like him. And that wasn't even an exaggeration. It wasn't something, you know, you ran on a matzeva. No, it was real. They really believed it. They really, really believed it. And the Rambam knew exactly who he was. He knew the role that he was playing. And he knew this impact that he would have on Klal Yisrael. It's an amazing thing. Because the Rav, I'll just end with this idea, which is a Rosh Hashanah idea. So you don't accuse me that I didn't talk about Moedei Tishrei. Yesterday was Rav Kook's Yahrzeit. Gimel Elul. Okay. And it's also going to be the Yahrzeit now of Rav Shai Shavkon. Zechron Lebracha, right? Who I had a schut of knowing. The Rav met Rav Kook 1935, briefly, when he was here. When the Rav was here for his short and only visit to Eretz Yisrael. I rarely heard him quote anything from Rav Kook, although he was familiar with some of the thoughts of Rav Kook. But there was one that he loved, and he integrated into his Tshuva drushes. It's in print, in the Ala Tshuva. Rav Kook is found in Rav Kook's Perush on Siddur and Machzor called Olat Re'iyah. At the end of Yom Kippur Davening, every Shmoneh Esrei, we say Elokai, Ad shelo notzarti, eini kedai. V'achshav shenotzarti, ki'ilu lo notzarti. We say, God, until I was born, I wasn't worth anything. Eini kedai. But now that I was born, it's like I wasn't born yet. It was, I'm still not worth much. What does that mean? What does that mean? Rav Kook said, Elokai, ad shelo notzarti, eini kedai. Why before you were born, you weren't worth anything? Because there's a reason that you were born into this historic context, and this family, and this land, and this city, and this household, and this this neighborhood, because you have something to do to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You had nothing to do 100 years ago and 1,000 years ago. Ad shelo notzarti, eini kedai. Until I was born, I was worth nothing, because there was nothing for me to do, there was no agenda. You know what the problem is? V'achshav shenotzarti, ki'ilu lo notzarti. Haven't figured it out yet. What I'm supposed to be doing to serve you properly. There are some people who have a schut, who go through life and actually feel they hit it on the head. They know exactly why they're here and know exactly what a Kadosh Baruch Hu demands of them, and they do it. And they do it. They have such a feeling. Not everybody. Some people, let's not exaggerate. A lot of people here feel that, and I'm sure we're all in good company here on this, that a lot of things we did, Kadosh Baruch Hu could be very happy with us and proud of us, but not everything. We slip, we're human, that's all. That's the way we are. Thank God there's Yom Kippur, and we get on with our lives. But to be able to say, everything I did in life was in sync with Ratzon Hashem, this is what Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to do at this juncture in my life, and that's why I was here, That's a rarity. That's really, I think the Rambam would have been able to make such a comment about himself, which is really, really startling. So with that thought, we'll continue next week in Mitzvah Hashem, and we'll get into some of the more details of the Yom Kippur. Yes. Eini kedai, v'achshav shenotzarti, ki'ilu lo notzarti. Look, you open up a mafzer of Yom Kippur, every Shmon Esrei ends. Ki'ilu lo notzarti.
But now that I'm here, I haven't figured it out yet.
You know something, and I'm working on it. I got an aha this morning.
Okay.
I started writing on WhatsApp using the tools that we have.
Okay.
And writing to grandchildren to the school, Boketol, Lailatol. Do you know the responses in the last 24 hours that I've gotten? I think that might be all we have to do is say good morning and give them an icon with it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Really good.